This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
MPR wants to hear from you, the listener. How can we improve your experience? What are we doing well? What can we do better? Head to mpr.nz and click on the listener survey button to be taken to a short series of questions that will help us do better. You'll also go in the draw to win a $50 Cafe Royale voucher. That's mpr.nz or find the link on our Facebook page.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Keith Clark,
Jane Bolton,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Keith, we've heard about your early life, and now we're just about at the time when you moved to Palmerston North. So what was it that led to that?
Well, while I was at Kaitiki and courting Leslie, who was in Te Horo, we decided we'd like to get married. And so I wrote to the Whanganui board with a request that, if possible, could I get a job somewhere in Palmerston North? And they replied to say that there was a job coming up at West End. Would I apply for it? And I did, and I got it. And so we proceeded then to make plans to go down to get married. And of course, Lizzie was from a high country station in Seddon, and so that's where we got married the following January. Leslie resigned from Te Horo, and I...
Did you ask for both of you to get jobs in Palmerston North then?
Yes, more or less, yes. And anyway, I went down to Leslie's home to meet the parents. I'd met them before and they knew me well, but I... was under a bit of trepidation about it, because I had to say to them, look, okay, I'm a teacher and I've got a job for a long time ahead probably, but my only belongings are a 303 and a 22 and a good shotgun.
These are your rifles, yeah, okay.
And a big a Springer Spaniel. And... you know, I've got a little bit of money in the bank, but it's not a fortune. And anyway, I think Leslie must have had a good talk to her mum and dad, because it was all okay. So yeah. We then went ahead. So,
now, at that time, was that was it a big thing to get the parents' approval before marriage?
Well, it was traditional. Yes.
Irrespective of the age of the prospective bride and groom.
Yes, it seemed to be that you needed to get permission, but that, I think that was probably just protocol at the time.
Yeah, so it was unlikely to be refused.
Yes, it was.
Well, hopefully.
But so the wedding was on January the 5th, and it was a celebration for the whole district, because this was the eldest girl, and they were very well known in the area. They there was a big family of them, and so we had a lovely little service in the Presbyterian church there that was packed, and Leslie arrived late, and I was standing up at the front of the whole area there, waiting patiently, and one of the old hard case uncles said, "She's turned him down." Anyway,
one of your uncles or one of hers?
No.
Of hers. Now with the church, was there anything that you had to go through with them? Some training?
Oh, yes, we had to do some, talking with the minister and you know.
So what did that involve? Was it just you as a couple and the minister?
Yeah, just us as a couple.
What, a series of sessions or one
session? Yes, two or three sessions, yes.
Okay.
And then mainly about the protocol of the wedding and that sort of thing, you know.
Oh, so it's about the wedding, not about marriage and so on.
No, well, there was one session of that sort of thing too, yes. But we had, it was about 5 o'clock at night, and we had we followed on then to a very big sort of feast, if you like, a traditional local reception and feasts and a dance afterwards, which was for the whole district as well. So
and that was sort of waltz and ballroom type dancing.
Yes. Lots of laughter and some wine and beer and stuff like that.
And you had a live band?
Yes. It was a great event, and we've finally managed to get away. I'd arranged with my best man, Malcolm Cargo, who's since passed away. Malcolm arranged so we had two rental cars, one hidden and one on display. And the one on display got really done over.
Yes.
With tins and all the paint and all sort of white paint and stuff. But I'd had a nice one hidden around us. So when we finally decided to leave about 9 or 10 o'clock that night, we managed to get into this and away before anyone really realised. So that was a...
You spoiled the party.
Now, with the wedding and reception, now there's a lot of talk about wedding planners and people professional organisation. Was that the pattern in your day?
No, it was done locally. Leslie had a gown made in Blenheim with a dressmaker that was part of the, you know, a family dressmaker almost.
Oh, yeah.
And the rest of it was more or less done by the local people. You know, they all got together and helped and so on.
Oh, so
they
all mucked in and...
Yes.
Because usually the bride's mother is very involved.
Yes, well, she was too, yes. Mm. And Leslie had some, you know, her bridesmaids and all. And, you know, we had... the other groom was a cousin, and she had her sister as a bridesmaid and my sister as a bridesmaid. Mm-hmm. So it was
traditional.
We had quite a big entourage all together.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we went on and stayed in Kaikoura, and then went on down to Akaraa.
Mm-hmm.
That was our honeymoon venue. So by then, we'd also had word from the board that I'd got a job, and Leslie had also got a job at Rangakia School, which was then the school for the Hakia Aerodrome. Okay. There was a three-teacher school on that particular site. So, and also my parents, who at that time were at Bull's, Dad was the manager of Rangitiki, dairy factory at the time, and he'd found out that one of the local farmers had built a little cottage for retirement but didn't need it for some time. So we asked if we could rent it, and we did. So we had a lovely little new cottage to go into after we got back from South Island. So...
And how did the two of you get to work then? Because
Rangakia was within biking distance, and for the first month or so at West End, I used to go by school bus. There was a school bus always went in from Balls into Palmerston North. So I went by that for a start, but I had a bicycle where the eye information is now in the centre of Palmerston.
Yeah.
There used to be a lot of flax bushes and things there, and I used to put it in behind the
And it was place. Safe.
It was safe.
Okay.
It wouldn't be safe today, but it was then. And so, because the railway used to go right through at that stage.
Yeah.
And And so I would bike to West End School and we'd do the same.
Right. You mean you take the bus into town and then take the bike to the school?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what was it like being on the bus with all the school children? Did they
They were a bit... wondered about it for a start, but I just kept out of the road of everybody and didn't make too much.
Let them misbehave without.
Well, after a little while, I thought I wanted to be more independent, so I got a motorcycle, little BSA, and so I used that to go in and out, and so I had a very pleasant 3 years at West End School. It was West End the best end. And it was...
a lot of that area wouldn't have been built up then, was it? Was it a lot of horticulture?
The state housing estate had gone in. The big state house
Savage
area.
Crescent area.
Yes, Savage Crescent area had gone in. And a lot of the children were from returned soldiers and so on. Okay. And, you know, it was the baby boom, I suppose, post-war baby boom group. And they were generally hard-working, nice kids.
Yeah.
You know,
were they academically inclined, or was education valued in their homes?
Not particularly, no.
Okay.
No, but they were more looking at plumbing and, you know, those sort of jobs.
Yeah.
Some of them, I can still remember, are still here. They were in plumbing jobs and things like that.
They're very important jobs.
Yes, yes. Well, at that time it was very important because they were building state houses everywhere and so on.
Yes.
So
This actually, if you still see them around, this is an interesting issue. We were just discussing earlier today. We need people to be electricians and plumbers and so on, and mechanics. And it's fine for people in their 20s and 30s and so on, but 50-year-olds, what sort of things do they do then? You know, so your pupils who went into that...
Yes.
What did they do in
working
life?
The ones that I can remember, generally, for instance, the Mudgeways one firm, they started up on their own, but then became a firm, and that's what's happened now.
They move into management
and big business, much bigger business. So that was the sort of progression for many of them.
Yeah.
So
they had quite successful working lives then?
Yes.
How would that compare to other schools in Palmerston North? Was there much of a distinction?
At that stage, Hoka Fiji, I suppose, was the prominent school where everybody wanted to go.
Was Central Normal?
Central Normal was very important, and that was the sort of key school for the area. I suppose
were there science centres and so on at that time, so there'd be children
intermediate normal and that had the main centre for woodwork and home cookery and that sort of thing.
But in Palmerston, are you talking about what the 1950s.
Yes.
So the agricultural college was there, but it wasn't a university. Would that be right?
Just starting.
Yes.
So you wouldn't like now. There was DSIR and all science research. There was none of that at that stage. The military bases you'd have Okatia.
Queen Elizabeth was the equivalent of a trade school, I suppose. That sort of thing.
Okay.
You went there.
Yeah.
Most children that wanted to follow on went to there.
Okay.
Yes. And boys' high, of course, and girls' high was still very prominent.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of into school sport. We used to have bicycle groups of us we'd all get on our bicycle and we'd take our school team off to play against Central Normal or one of those sort of schools all the time.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, quite interesting. I was there for 3 years and we had there's some very significant teachers there at the time. Ira Charles, who later became Fielding Intermediates principal. Bert, Mr. Lancaster, who was our principal, he was a very fine man. We had Bessie Barry, who became the advisor for the Whanganui Board for infant work. Mrs. Hay, who was that very stern disciplinarian, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And you could do that in those days?
Strapping was quite a feature of the day, I suppose, for most people. I didn't have to do it. I had a strap, but it was in my drawer. They knew it was there, but that was about all. But I had classes were big in those days. I had 47 children in standard one and two combined staff class. And so it was a...
So how did you manage a class like that?
You had to... It started off, the only way you could handle it was sort of formal work. You had everything blackboarded and they had their writing to do.
So and rote learning and rote memory work.
A lot of that sort of thing, yes. Yeah. Learn their tables and... Yeah. You know, it was a basic kind of program. You had to timetable it and routine it.
Yeah. So what about, I mean, now you have gifted pupils, yes, programs.
Well,
and
at
stuff.
The time, I was at the forefront with people at Central Normal. We worked together to start group teaching. Mm. And for a start, it was pretty difficult because there was no material, no apparatus. So we had to make our own work. So we would make a lot of puzzles and all sorts of things, quiz sort of things that they had to look up, and we had these in boxes, stocking boxes. Yeah. So I used to haunt
haberdashery shops,
the big supermarket, department stores, to get their stocking boxes and things. Mm. And I'd paint them in different colours.
Mm.
So for each group, there would be a different coloured one. So
you had time for... You didn't have lots of administrative paperwork recording all the marks programme structures?
We used to do a lot of that at night. Boxes had to be painted and, you know, and you would do a lot of sort of maths little problems at a certain level.
Yeah.
And you'd do some spelling things in English.
You'd have sort of a card with 9 problems on or something.
Yeah, that was book work for them, desk work for them, while you were teaching the top group or teaching the bottom group or whatever it was. And so you used to... it meant a lot of work. You used to work weekends doing all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Now, what about the pupil? You said children are returned servicemen, but were there many migrants coming in at that stage? So when did the £10 POM wave come? That was later, their children were. The £10 POMs were coming over in the 1950s. But maybe their children would be coming in another decade later, perhaps.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, I spent 3 years there. We worked... Leslie... we lived at a flat at Longburn, it was quite hard to get accommodation in those days. But
so you started off in this retirement cottage,
yes,
and then you moved to Longburn,
yes,
okay,
yes, and Leslie was pregnant at that stage, so she was at home, and I'd bought a little baby Austin at that stage. And so we used to go, I used to travel to school on that, or sometimes I'd bike even if it was a nice day. And so we had 3, you know, very interesting years here. Our eldest son was born, and
so with Leslie, she started off, she was teaching out at
Rangakia.
At Rangakia.
Yes.
And then
she stopped teaching there. She relieved for some times.
Okay.
And that was about it. But then we decided we wanted to, I wanted to get more promotion, so I applied for a job in Blenheim and got that, because this was Leslie's hometown, more or less, so... So we went down there and lived in a nice flat down there, and I was at Springland School at that stage, and as their sort of senior teacher, and we loved that. I was there for about 5 years, and during that time, the principal of the school got very ill with. He went blind, and so he retired, and the board asked me if I'd take over the school at the time, and so I became principal of the of the school. It was only a small five-teacher school with about 200 children.
So what age were you then?
Oh,
late 20s?
Yes, somewhere about that, yes. But
still young.
Yes, yeah, it was 1970-something, so it'd be no 30s-odd, yes. And
So you were renting all this time.
Yes, but only for only for perhaps less than 6 months or more.
Oh, okay.
Because one of the school one of the people at the school I taught. Their children, three children, and they had a little area right near the school, and they had a section coming up, and they asked me if I'd like it, so I jumped at it. It was a third of a third of an acre, cost me I think about £200 I think at the time, and so we built a. About 950 square metre cottage on it.
Because in those days, would home ownership would be quite normal, think, would it be? So young people, they set up, they get married, and they own their own home.
Yes. But, we've been lucky, Leslie. You see, we'd put the money that Leslie had been earning as teaching for 3 years. We hadn't touched that at all. So that had gone straight into the bank. And also... I used to spend a lot of spare time on weekends. If I had spare time weekends, then I would work for the Hills Carrying Company, getting hay. I would lift hay for them. We'd go out and, you know, get bales of hay. I got some pretty bad sunburn, all sorts of things from doing all that, and hands.
You say we, was that both of you doing that?
No, just me.
Okay.
And then on in the winter, one of the local, the Meads brothers, they used to put a 10-ton truck of coal off at Grateford. And it was my job to drive a truck to Grateford on Saturday morning and fill 16 bags of coal, and then bring the truck back, and then get another truck for the afternoon and do the other 5 ton.
Was this normal to be doing a full-time teaching job with nearly 50 children in the class, and then at weekends
you tried to get some more money if you could, because we didn't get much as teachers in those days. And so it was very useful money. They used to pay us £4 a day for that, and we'd get a bag of coal as a
bonus. Now, what would your pupils think if they saw you working, delivering coal at the weekend? They just treat it as normal?
I don't think they'd have worried at all, no.
Yeah.
But it was good money, and also at the dairy factory I also had the chance to get extra money on at nights if I needed to. I could go to the factory at nights and make butter boxes. Either they had they were just changing from the old white pine boxes over to cardboard cartons, and they all had to be pasted up and got ready.
Mm-hmm.
So they needed about 40 or 50 of those a day. So, and I used to get about threepence a carton or something for doing them. So,
so now what's threepence?
Yes.
That's a quarter of a shilling, which is an 1/80 of a pound.
Yes,
which,
exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was. I was young and very fit.
Mm. Yeah.
And so.
A bit of. And was this normal? So are the.
Yes,
so your friend in your social
of,
circle.
Yes, a lot
people
of people
be doing that.
Did extra work of some sort.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the ways we could get on. You know. Was,
yeah.
By saving money that way. Anyway, Blenheim was interesting. The school I was in Springlands, it had sort of middle-class groups, but we had quite a lot of Air Force people as well from the aerodrome there. And I started off... suggesting that they move away from their little fairs they used to have where they earned about £200 a year. I said, I think we should do better than that. Yeah. And so what we did, I had contacts. We had pilots from the air from Woodburn. And so the Air Force came in with a whole mass of stuff to look at and show and do things. The police,
or displays they put on. Yeah.
The police came in with police dogs for us, and I'd arranged for a group called Buckets Gym from Christchurch. There were a set of girls that used to do gymnastics, and we had a contact with them. And so they came up and they became part of our school gala then every year, and they would come out and do all sorts of dancing for us and things like that. And then I used the playground to get bales of hay and stuff around, and we got a go-kart group going. And so we also gave all the mums and dads extra money out of the accounts to go and spend on sale days.
Mm-hmm.
So they got lots of... materials and sugar and all sorts of things that they had turned into toffees, and they turned into aprons and all sorts of clothes, you know,
Oven
for children,
and apple.
All sorts of things like that. And some of the farmers offered a few sheep for, you know, that were killed and butchered ready. And we could do that in those days.
Yeah.
And
they
some of them cooked cakes. We had cake stalls and. And horse rides, we had pony rides, all sorts of things like that. We went from the 200 to £2,000. And it's kept going ever since.
So it brought in a lot of the local community.
Well, they brought in all of Blenheim rather than just the little community. And now I was in the school just 2 years ago, I suppose, and they took me around, showed me everything. They said, do you know, we now are in a situation where we don't even worry about the money from the board or anywhere like that. We just buy what we want. If we want to put a new hall up, we do. If we want to put a new set of computers in, away we go. So it's probably the best equipped school now that in New Zealand, one of the best. They've even put solar panels.
Yeah.
On the roofs.
Brilliant.
In order to get electricity, and they get enough out of that to put into the grid. So they, it's amazing, really.
Excellent.
And the principal of the school now is the daughter of one of the staff I used to have.
Wow,
fascinating.
This is part 3. Listen next week for part 4.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.